Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
So today we are talking about, can a person get a divorce in Ontario before settling all of their other issues? Well, let's first talk about what are these other issues, because I can't tell you how many times in the last 30 years people call me and go, Mr. Benmore, I want a divorce. And they think that if they get this thing starting with a D and ending with an E, that is the end of everything. But they forget about this thing called corollary relief. That's actually what it used to be called in the Divorce Act. And corollary relief is basically everything other than the divorce. Parenting, what once was called custody and access, decision making, child support, spousal support, Section 7 expenses, property division, pension division, the matrimonial home, freezing orders. There's all these other things that are outside of the piece of paper that says this marriage has been dissolved by a divorce decree. And so then the question becomes, can somebody get just the divorce order that says they're no longer legally married while all the other things haven't yet been resolved? Has this been a question that you have been asked?
Oh, frequently. It comes up a lot. As we're going to chat about, there's pros and cons with certain approaches to it, but it's definitely an issue that I find regularly comes up with clients.
So first things first is some language and definitions. So it used to be called a petition for divorce. It's now called an application for divorce. People will sometimes go online and look it up on their own, and they will find either a application for divorce or an application for a joint divorce or a joint application for divorce. And people get confused about that. The application for divorce form, you can check off just divorce, or you can check off divorce and all of the other issues. In a joint divorce application, generally it's just the divorce. And when people say that they just want a divorce, I often tell them to not use the joint application, because the joint application requires two cooks in the kitchen and signatures from two people, and it's more complicated. So even where there is this sort of cooperation that would allow them to get a divorce, I still recommend that people just do a sole application.
I do the same.
Right. And then the question that the viewers are tuning in. Do we need to have everything else resolved in advance? And the short answer to that is yes. There are cases where judges will grant a divorce order without everything else being resolved. One more definitional or axiomatic piece of information is that to get married in Ontario, you can either have a marriage officer like a imam, rabbi, or priest marry you, or somebody that's licensed under the Marriage Act to marry you. It can happen anywhere. It can happen in an apartment, in a hotel room, in church. It can happen anywhere. There's no requirement that the marriage occur in a particular place. To get a divorce in Ontario, on the other hand, you need a judge to order it. For a judge to order it, you need to apply to court to ask for such an order. And so it's a far more comprehensive and complex process to be divorced, or to put it in simple language, the judge in divorce court is the gatekeeper as to whether the person can be divorced or not. And so what key do you have to give the judge to let you through and get a divorce? Well, it used to be that people could just say to the judge in the court documents or orally, we're going to resolve everything else later in mediation or privately. But now judges are far more particular and require that either the issues be resolved already in a document called the separation agreement or a court order, or alternatively, that the judge is satisfied that at least the issues pertaining to the children are resolved. So for example, parenting and child support are the most obvious ones. So as a result of the fact that it's been my experience that some judges will just not grant the divorce, or even worse, we don't even make it to the judge because the other side says, if you so much as ask for the divorce, we will oppose it on the basis that we haven't yet resolved parenting or child support. I say to the client, you know what? I think we're going to have an uphill battle. Let's try to focus our energy on resolving everything else, and then the divorce will sort of follow suit. And that's generally what I say. What about you? What's been your experience?
I've had some different experiences. So I've had situations where clients have been granted a divorce without all of the issues being settled. Again, the parenting and child support issues have always had to be settled, but I've had cases where there weren't children, or the children were, you know, adult children, and the parties were just dealing with some property issues and they wanted to get the divorce finalized, and we were able to do that and a judge would sign off on it. And I've even had the situation where I had a judge like putting pressure a little bit on my client to agree to have the divorce severed from the remaining issues. And she was not happy about that because she felt that like her former husband wanted to remarry, and she felt that granting the divorce was sort of the only piece of leverage she felt she had in getting the other stuff negotiated and settled in a timely manner. And she was concerned that by granting the divorce, she was going to lose any sort of power she might have in the process. And so she was not happy that, you know, the judge was putting some pressure on her to agree to sever the divorce. And I have had situations where people have wanted to sever the divorce and we've submitted some things and then it got rejected by the judge because they had some questions about, you know, we outlined that certain things had been settled with respect in particular to child support and parenting, but the judge had further questions that, you know, felt he or she had felt were not sufficiently outlined in the material that was filed. And once we answered those questions, we were able to get the divorce order. But it's not just a routine, you know, stamping of approval for sure when there's other outstanding issues.
It is quite interesting when we think about it constitutionally that two people in Ontario could marry anywhere, anytime, with any one of thousands of marriage officers. Anybody can apply to become a marriage officer, and once they've been checked and licensed, they can grant marriages to any two people that are over the age of 18 and competent. But yet, to get a divorce in Canada and Ontario, you actually have to go to court. You have to start a court proceeding. And in that court proceeding, you need to swear and provide evidence that you've met one of the grounds of divorce: adultery, cruelty, or 1 year separation, the last one being the most common one. And moreover, even though it's not stated in the Divorce Act, oftentimes judges will make inquiries to see, have the other issues been resolved? And like you said, Leanne, in some cases you give the right answer and they say, fine, we accept that, we'll grant you the divorce, to use the language that you did. They'll sever the divorce, they'll sort of bifurcate it, move it away from the other issues and grant just that order. But, you know, you do have the issue of a gatekeeper, and it's not so simple. And so in that respect, I find it just interesting. One of the things that I want our viewers to know before we leave the subject of divorce is that there are two legal considerations. One legal consideration is the actual act of being divorced changes your legal status. So for example, when you file your tax return, you move from being separated to divorced. That's one. Two, it changes your status in the field of estates law. You're no longer legally married and separated. You're now legally divorced. And so it does affect estates rights. Now, it may not have much of an effect if there's no estate issues to be addressed, or if the estate issues have been addressed by way of a separation agreement or court order. But it definitely changes one's legal status from being married and separated to divorced. And that could change one's estate's rights. The other thing that people have to recognize, and a lot of people don't think about this, but there's a limitation period in the Family Law Act for property rights. And the limitation period is the earliest of one of the following three things: 6 years from the date of separation, 6 months from the date of death, 2 years from the date of divorce. And so if you're divorced early and you haven't settled everything, the period to seek a property division right expires 2 years after the date of the divorce, which is 4 years earlier if, for example, you are separated and not yet divorced. And these are things that people have to think about, because a lot of people say, you know what, we're on good terms, we're going to work everything out, the house is in his name or it's in my name, or there's no house but we've got pensions, but we'll deal with that later. And then they get a divorce to allow one of them to remarry, and they forget about the fact that there is this mammoth pension that hasn't been divided yet, and the right to having it divided expires 2 years after divorce. And so if you get a divorce and you don't deal with that, you could actually be out of luck. So there are some pretty important legal issues, and that's one of the reasons why there's been such a kerfuffle amongst lawyers to allow paralegals to help people get a divorce. Some people think, you know, it's just a divorce order. It's not complicated. Fill out some forms, file them in court or online, pay the fee, get the divorce order. Yeah, there's some truth to that. But what about those legal repercussions that could be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that goes unchecked because they didn't get proper legal advice? Anyway, that's one of the factors to consider. And of course, you and I, Leanne, tell clients about those legal consequences.
Yes, and it's very true that, you know, a lot of people think, you know, an uncontested divorce, that should be simple. And there's certainly plenty of websites now where people can go on and, you know, they can pay a fee to the site and, you know, it says that they can get their uncontested divorce. And, you know, it is a little concerning because I don't know if the sites are taking into account, you know, some of the issues that you just raised, Steve, and making people aware of it. But a lot of people, you know, they don't want to pay a lot of money. So they think, oh, if I could just do that online, that's great. And, you know, really, you know, it might come up like, why does someone even want to get a divorce? Like, why would someone want to sever the divorce? Or why does someone want to get a divorce? And, you know, and really the main reason is somebody wants to remarry, because otherwise it doesn't really, if you're legally separated, it doesn't really change anything else other than that if one of the parties wants to remarry.
I'll tell you, I've had people say to me, you know, I'm dating. And, you know, not that I'm particularly interested in hearing about their stories, but some people will say, one of the reasons why I called you, Mr. Benmore, is because I've gone on a bunch of dates, and the women that I'm dating, they ask, am I divorced? And I say, well, I've been apart with my wife for 5 years, but I'm not divorced yet. And their nose gets bent out of shape to hear that they're on a date with a guy that's still married and not divorced.
So, yeah, a lot of people don't understand, you know, that your relationship can I mean, my ex-husband and I were separated a number of years before we got divorced, and that relationship was definitely over. But, you know, I hear those stories too about the dating world, and, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily, you know, understand that, you know, people can be separated and the relationship really, really is over. And I do think also just from the mindset or mental health aspect of the participants, sometimes there's something that maybe getting divorced feels like you've got more of a closure. Although if you still have unresolved issues that need to be, you know, dealt with.
Who doesn't have
property.
Unresolved issues?
Yeah. Unresolved property and support issues. You know, I don't think, you know, getting a divorce is going to give you that closure because you still got the legal stuff hanging over you. But, you know, maybe for somebody that maybe it can give them a little bit of closure knowing that the relationship is totally over. And that
let
might
me
motivate
squeeze
them.
One more tidbit of legal information before we wrap up. Just occurred to me that one of the reasons why some people deliberately do not get divorced is because some people are in relationships and marriages where one person has health insurance through work, and the other person does not. And the other person has really high medical bills and prescription bills, and they have particular drugs that are covered by the healthcare plan. And when they split up and they did a separation agreement, they recognized that the amount that of spousal support that is paid is predicated on the fact that the insurance is covering the medical and prescription bills. But if the insurance were to not be available, the person in need of medical and prescription would need more spousal support. So the couple deliberately does not get a divorce in order to continue accessing the healthcare plan that would otherwise be terminated if they were divorced. Now, interestingly, I've examined this a little bit more closely, and a lot of people are doing it in an underhanded way, because many of these insurance policies say that the spouse is no longer entitled to coverage if they're separated, even though they're not yet divorced. Some people have continued to put the claims through, even though they're separated but not yet divorced, and the insurance company is not any smarter, so they're just covering it. But I can tell you, this is definitely a live issue for someone that, for example, spends, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a month in medications and medical costs that are covered by, for example, the teacher's healthcare plan or the fireman's healthcare plan or the doctor's healthcare plan. And it's a significant consideration when it comes to divorce.
Definitely. I find that's something that comes up a lot. And it's certainly something that when you're in the whole negotiation process, and yes, the parties are separated, it is very common that, you know, in separation agreements and whatnot, we put clauses that they're going to keep the other party on their medical, you know, benefits for as long as they can, you know, which usually the thought process is until they're divorced and really they just can't, because the medical, you know, provider becomes aware that the parties are no longer together. But it is something that can be, you know, of a huge issue for people who have high, you know, drug expenses or other medical type expenses that are covered by this.
I had a case a couple of years ago where both of them wanted to keep the health insurance in place. And even though I gave them the necessary written and oral warnings, they said, that's fine. So in order to protect my client, who was the recipient, the one that needed the medical insurance, I added an additional clause that said that the spousal support can be reopened and increased if the healthcare insurance was no longer available, just to ensure that there was a gateway. Because if, God forbid, the insurance was no longer available, this woman would never have been able to survive with the spousal support that she was getting, because it would all have been going to medications. So we addressed it. But again, it's not foolproof. It's got its own challenges and limitations, and it involves insurance law, which is outside of our purview as well.
Yeah. No, it's good that you brought that up, because that is a really important point.
Absolutely.
Well, and I so think we covered this topic well.
Yes, but with some challenges.
Yeah. No, and I was, it's funny, when I saw what our topic was today, I was thinking, like, how are we going to talk for like 20 or 30 minutes on this topic? But, you know, I started off just before you joined us, Steve, by talking about how, you know, we've now been doing these lives for over 3 years. We started during COVID, and we've never repeated the topic in 3 years. On an almost weekly basis, we've been able to come up with a new topic every time. So that says something about how complex family law is and how many issues there really are. So even on a topic like this, which seems fairly straightforward, and you know, you might think the answer could be talked about in like 2 minutes, there's lots of issues involved that, you know, nothing is just as it seems.
You got it. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Leanne. Thank you to our viewers, and we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.